Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, episode 9 of the Instant Offense Podcast. I'm James Hollis of B-Ball Breakdown. Episode 9, I've been doing a preview series. I'm running through some of the teams of interest, and this is actually my favorite one. I'm joined by one of my favorite guys on Twitter and on the web, writer for ESPN, and he's the editor of Daily Thunder, Royce Young. Royce, you there?
I am here, James.
Oh, man. I've been really looking forward to it. Excited to have you on. How's the week going so far? I know it's only Monday.
Yeah, it's good. It's going good. You know, just trying to fill my time until my life turns crazy here in about a month or so when training camps get going, which is crazy to think that training camps are coming in, you know, like, I don't know, 35 days or something. So it's NBA season is getting closer and closer. I know everybody's excited about college football and the NFL is about to start, but us basketball nerds are counting down the days till training camp and media days, which are, you know, just a little over a month away.
Oh man, I'm chomping at the bit. This season more than any seems to have so many little bylines and side stories. What are the Cavs going to do? What's Orlando going to do this year coming up? And of course, to me, one of the biggest stories is what OKC is going to do. Since I'd say since they lost in the finals, I picked them actually to win over Miami. I don't know what I was thinking in hindsight, but you know, we all thought, hey, they're going to be back here every year. It didn't quite work out like that, and now we're kind of, it feels like a crossroads of the for the franchise. So last season, of course, was, you know, injury riddles. I can't remember a team had to deal with so many injuries at just at the wrong time. Going through last season, when did you really realize that things were really off the rails and that the playoffs were probably going to be missed?
I didn't realize the playoffs were going to be missed until the final night of the season. I mean, when Durant was officially taken off the court and it was decided that he was going to undergo season-ending surgery, at that point everybody crossed off any kind of championship dream. I mean, that was over. But the Thunder still seemed to have enough to get into the postseason. They were in a good position. Their schedule was really favorable. They were going to play a lot of home games. And they still had Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, now Serge Ibaka is having knee surgery. And it wasn't known that his season was going to be over, but that's what ended up happening. And even still, they were still in position with the way Russell Westbrook played, with the trade that brought in Enes Kanter. They had enough offense. Their defense really, really struggled in the last 2 months of the season, but they were able to outscore a lot of teams, and they were able to beat the teams that they should. They couldn't beat anybody very good, but basically up until the final night of the season, it seemed like they were still going to get in. And, you know, it was just simple. The Thunder had to beat the Timberwolves, who didn't want to win that game, and the Spurs just had to beat the Pelicans, and it didn't work out that way. The Pelicans somehow beat the Spurs and beat them pretty impressively, and the Thunder ended up sitting home. So, I mean, it was pretty obvious that any kind of preseason aspiration that the Thunder had, because like you said, I mean, this team is constantly one that's in the championship conversation. But as soon as Kevin Durant was ruled out, that was over. But there was still a thought that maybe they could get into the playoffs and they could at least push the Warriors a little bit, give them a little bit of a series, and we could see what Russell Westbrook could do running wild for maybe 4 or 5 games. But that didn't happen.
Yeah, it's, you look back and like certain things stick out, like the loss to the Knicks. That hurt. The bank shot by Anthony Davis to win the game after Russ was just amazing all game. Little things, and then like you said, once I saw Serge go out, it one thing after another with those guys last season. But on the slim of the silver linings, we got to see what a lot of people have been asking for. What would Russell Westbrook do without Kevin Durant on the floor for extended periods? And he was just scintillating. There was some talk for MVP, and we know that record plays into that. What was that like watching him all season? I know not getting the wins kind of hurt. Well, not kind of hurt. That's what's all about wins and losses. But he was right. Amazing. What was that like watching up close?
It was awesome. I mean, to just kind of see Russell Westbrook kind of throw all caution to the wind. It's not like Russell Westbrook plays all that measured and and you know, and within himself all the time anyway. But I mean, he had every excuse to just go crazy. The game that sticks out to me most is the one in Indiana. The Thunder lost the game, and a lot of people obviously looked at Russell Westbrook. I think he, what did he shoot, 44 times or something like that. You know, he obviously, it was a ridiculous game. I think he scored 54. But it was the type of game where, you know, it was just kind of open season for Westbrook's critics. It was easy. It was, you know, chum in the water for Russell Westbrook's critics to come out and hammer him. But it was one of those things that if you paid close attention to the way he played, to me it was the perfect summation of why you should appreciate Russell Westbrook. Is, yes, he shot too much. Yes, he lost you know, concentration in terms of the greater good of what should happen within the game and keeping teammates involved and all that type of stuff. But that dude went out there and he competed his butt off for 48 minutes. And to me, it's just one of those things of what makes him such a unique player, and you know why I really feel like he's the most interesting player in the NBA. It's just because he was so great in that game while also simultaneously being so bad. It's just, it's incredible to watch and just see a guy that is so relentless night to night. And he just had the freedom to just kind of to do whatever he wanted. But, you know, I think that, you know, you mentioned the silver lining, and if there is a silver lining to some of this stuff, it's, you know, obviously the narrative that has followed around the Thunder for a long time has been the relationship between Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. And people have wondered, you know, have always kind of speculated, what would Kevin Durant do with a more traditional type of point guard if he was off on his own? Or what would Russell Westbrook do if he had his hands on a team like Derrick Rose used to have in Chicago and Russell Westbrook could do his own thing? Well, both of those guys in the last two seasons have gotten to get a taste of what that's like. You know, Westbrook missed, what was it, I think 43 games or 36 games 2 years ago because of knee scopes. And Kevin Durant went crazy. He won the MVP. But it was clear that the Thunder as a whole and Kevin Durant needed Russell Westbrook for the team to be really, really good and reach the goal that they wanted, which is a championship. And then last season, Westbrook had the 10 triple-doubles. He had the 5 straight or whatever it was. He was absolutely magnificent, but the team couldn't beat, you know, even mediocre teams. And so, you know, if Russell Westbrook, whose main goal in life is to win basketball games, it's not to put up stats, it's not to take shots, he obviously saw himself front and center. He's got to have Kevin Durant if he wants to win. So I think that, you know, while the last two seasons have been really trying for the Thunder, at the same time, I think Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, it could be a good thing for them because they can sit back and they can look at it and they say, man, we need each other. If we're going to win and we're going to reach our goals, we got to have each other.
I agree 110%. I think it was really good for Westbrook to finally get to explore the full space and the full spectrum of his game. You know, he kind of get out of his system. Cause I'm with you, and you know better than anyone else. That whole thing about, oh, they, you know, whose team is it, and do they really, mm-hmm. Russ wants his own team? To me, it always sounds bogus because they seem to genuinely enjoy playing with each other, and, you know, no player in his right mind would say, hey, I'm playing with the second best player, arguably the best player in the league, and I want my own team. That just doesn't make any sense because, you know, Russ is a competitor. So the main thing that I think a lot of people will have harped on also was coaching. Scott Brooks did a great job of empowering those two all-stars and getting the best out of Serge Ibaka. But at the same time, the critique was, you know, the offense when things bogged down, mm-hmm. and he's not making the best use of his players. It's easy to say that, but I'm looking at his numbers, and I think Brooks had a 62% winning percentage, and after that first bad season, like 61%, 67%, 70% all the way to that last season with the injuries. So, I mean, he won a lot of games, but when they moved on to Billy Donovan, what was your thinking there? Was that the right move? Was that something that you've been waiting on?
Well, I'll put it this way. I mean, I think that the move made sense in a lot of ways to just kind of separate yourself from Scott Brooks. In a lot of ways, the front office felt that the team was kind of outgrowing Brooks because Brooks had a various message to the team. That was to come into practice every day, work hard, build a strong ethic and a culture of improvement, and to really get a young team to buy in to something. And Scott Brooks did that. I mean, there's no question about it that in terms of the youth and the development of the Thunder roster, Scott Brooks was integral to that because he helped those guys learn how to be professionals and learn how to practice and learn how to work and learn how to win, and got them all to play as a tight, cohesive unit. And Scott Brooks was great in terms of chemistry. Now, you mentioned it, James. He X's and O's and on-the-floor stuff, he had limitations. And you know, a lot of people have always painted me as this big Scott Brooks defender. And I, the only reason I think that maybe that I've stood back and I've never kind of waved the flag and said, you got to fire this guy, is for the things you mentioned. I mean, look at what he has accomplished. And look at the reasons for the failures, because all the failures had obvious excuses right there staring you in the face, starting with Russell Westbrook injuring his knee in the 2013 playoffs. That was maybe the best Thunder team that they've had. If you want to look at all the measurements and all the numbers, that team was ridiculously good. And that was the year after they traded James Harden and went to the finals. And that team was probably better than the one that went to the finals and lost in five games, because they had won 60 games. They were beating teams by, I think, more than 10 points per game in the regular season. They were ridiculously good, and Russell Westbrook tears his meniscus, and everything falls apart for him. The season after that, they're really, really good again. They win 59 games despite Russell Westbrook missing almost half the season, and they end up in the Western Conference Finals. And what happened? They didn't have Serge Ibaka, the most important player probably for them, against the San Antonio Spurs. And they didn't have him for the first two games, and Ibaka comes back and plays the final four games. And he did it probably playing at about 50%. So, you know, if you want to look at their failures, and then obviously last season, I mean, they didn't have Kevin Durant but for 27 games. So, you know, Scott Brooks, I think, had severe limitations. And maybe he had taken the Thunder as far as he was going to get them. And I think that that's what the front office saw. They saw too many issues within the excuses, and they felt like they had to finally pull the plug, especially in what's going to be the most important season in franchise history. But my perspective was, to answer your original question, I just didn't think it was fair to fire him. I thought that Scott Brooks deserved a chance to prove that he could be the guy. I don't know if he was the guy, and maybe eventually it would have been proved that they waited too long and they should have fired him years ago. But I felt like Scott Brooks had at least earned the right to try it, to see if he could finally push the Thunder over the edge, because he had never really had a full complement of players. He never had the full the full strength Thunder roster at his disposal, and because of that, you know, he ended up losing his job.
I see both sides, of course, and you're absolutely right. It, storybook ending would have been Brooks gets his whole team back this year. They rally together. They rampage through the playoffs. They overcome adversity. They're healthy, and they win a ring. That's the perfect storybook ending. But of course, ownership's looking at it as, well, we got to prove it to Kevin that we're trying to do this.
Yeah.
And he loves Brooks. X's and O's have failed us in the playoffs, and only the individual brilliance of Durant and Russ Westbrook and, you know, Reggie Jackson last year saved him a couple games in the playoffs. So I see both sides, and I really feel bad for him. I thought he'd been a perfect fit to go to, like, maybe Orlando or a team like that this year, because he did a great job instilling culture in the OKC. That's 100% true. But we rehashed the last year and what's happened so far. Let's look forward a little bit. Billy Donovan, he's you know, highly decorated college coach. He had the whole foo bar back in 2007. It's all water in the bridge. Nobody even thinks about it anymore. What do you think now? What is he bringing to the table? I'm pretty sure you've done some deep diving into his college numbers and what he's done. What do you see positive, and what questions should we ask maybe of him coming in?
Well, I think that, you know, Billy Donovan was obviously earmarked by the Thunder. I mean, he was the guy at the top of the list, and I don't think that they would have fired Scott Brooks without having an obvious replacement in mind, and that guy was Billy Donovan. And Sam Presti wanted him from the very beginning, because quite honestly, Brad Stevens was always Sam Presti's guy, and Sam Presti always kind of wanted Brad Stevens, but when Brad Stevens was ready to make the jump into the NBA, Presti was in too difficult of a position to fire Scott Brooks at the time. The Thunder were just coming off the finals. They were really, really successful, and that wouldn't have been fair at all at that time. And the team was still really bought in under what, you know, they were bought into what Scott Brooks was selling. So that didn't make sense at that time. But Presti still kind of missed out on his guy that he wanted. And Billy Donovan was also that kind of guy. And, you know, with Billy Donovan clearly kind of maybe ready to make that jump, I think Billy Donovan, it was a very specific situation that he was looking for to leave Florida. And he said that publicly, and it's kind of something that's been known privately, is that Billy Donovan wasn't just ready to go to the NBA. You know, he turned down the Cleveland Cavs last year. He turned down the Minnesota Timberwolves last year. He turned down a number of teams, and that were really good fits, and that was Cleveland Cavs pre-LeBron, by the way. The thing is that, you know, when Oklahoma City came calling, it was a unique situation for Billy Donovan to make that move, and clearly Sam Presti had his guy and wanted to get him. And you know, I think what Billy Donovan has kind of proven is that people kind of overlook a few things about him. You know, they look at, you know, yeah, he won two national championships at Florida. He's won a bunch of games. He's been to, I think, four Final Fours. Really, really successful college coach. But he's also 49 years old. And in the world of coaching, that is a young coach. And he is incredibly accomplished for being under 50 years old. And the thing that I think really appealed to the Thunder is not only has he won at Florida for a sustained period of time, but he's won in multiple different ways. It's not like Billy Donovan has like a Jim Boeheim type of, you know, system. Jim Boeheim, you know, runs the 2-3 zone, and that's just the way he wins games. And, you know, he recruits these certain type of players, and you plug and play him in the system, and you win. Billy Donovan's won right. in all sorts of different ways. He won with Noah and Horford with the two big guys. He went to the Final Four again, you know, with playing small ball. He had Chandler Parsons playing power forward and small forward at different times. He had that team that was maybe his best team yet at Florida that got upset by UConn in the Final Four. And he was playing with, I think, four guards. And he had four seniors on, or I think he was starting five seniors on that team. So Billy Donovan is kind of just he's a real, real forward thinking kind of guy. Now, the concerns are clear. You know, no NBA experience. How is his stuff going to translate into the professional level? You know, can he build strong relationships with such a strong-minded player like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, you know, guys that have already accomplished a whole lot in the NBA? Can Billy Donovan walk in and get those guys to buy back in to what he's selling? So, I mean, there's obvious concerns, you know, but I think that in terms of coaching acumen, I mean, who's got really a better resume out there than Billy Donovan? You know, if you want to remove the fact that, yes, he has never coached in the NBA before, it seemed like people are a little bit lukewarm on the hire when it happened. And I didn't really quite understand that, because if you're looking at just, you know, what have you done for me? Billy Donovan's got maybe one of the best resumes out there, period. And yes, there are concerns over college coaches transitioning to the NBA. There have been some pretty impressive failures. Billy Donovan's mentor, Rick Pitino, being the most obvious one. But yeah, at the same time, there's never been a college coach that has taken over an NBA roster like this one. And you can go look at them all. No college coach has ever walked onto an NBA roster with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka. So most college coaches step into situations where you've got a young team that's trying to build up from the ground. This one's ready built, ready to contend. And, you know, I think that's why Billy Donovan's going to have a ton of pressure on him. But at the same time, I think he's a pretty good fit for this team.
I mean, that's one of the many, many, many little by stories of this coming season. You know, KD, last time we saw him fully healthy, he was MVP. Last year, on one foot, he was at like 25-5-5. Russ Westbrook went, you know, bananas all last season. And I don't know if you know, Russ is my favorite player in the NBA. He's incredible. I called it two or three seasons ago when he was good, and I said he's gonna be the best point guard in the NBA. And people said I was crazy. And then last year, I think he played like the best point guard in the NBA for large stretches. He got tired. He got gassed a little bit. So now we're at a different stage. I think this is brand new for everyone involved, for Billy Donovan, for, you know, Durant's coming back. Russell Westbrook now has the expectations of a championship on his shoulders. Those two have been together now for, what, 6-7 years? They've grown together. Mm-hmm. They really do seem to just like playing with each other. That dynamic has changed so much, where Durant was and still is, I'm pretty sure, the leader of the team. But Russ has shown he's ready for a larger leadership role, and he's expanded his game. Last season when he played poorly, like, or he made some mistakes late in the game, and him actually stepping up and saying, hey, I got to find my guys here. I that was huge. I don't think he realized how huge it was to hear a player say that. And So moving forward between those two, I don't expect friction, but what do you expect from those two for this coming season?
Yeah, that's a great call on Westbrook last season. That was something that really stood out to me, and I should have mentioned that earlier, is that he really took massive steps, I think, in his maturation. And to hear him fess up to mistakes was something all new. I mean, that was like knock your jaw on the floor type of stuff, is for Russell Westbrook to stand there and say, I should have passed to that guy. I mean, that was like, you know, you're doing double takes in the locker room type of stuff. So, you know, that I think that the fact that Westbrook – clearly has matured a little bit, and is really, you know, that's something Nick Collison talked a lot about. You know, he's kind of the old sage. He's kind of the talisman of the team, and he talked a lot about last year about Russell growing up, and I think that Kevin Durant's always had that kind of lead by example leadership quality in him, but Russell Westbrook has never really figured out exactly how to kind of take, you know, his insane, you know, motivated, crazy drive that he has to compete and turn that into leadership. You know, I, for Durant, it's always come just, you know, easy as could be. It's just a natural thing for Kevin Durant. People follow him. It's never been a challenge. Westbrook has always just kind of been that lone wolf, lone ranger kind of guy. And, you know, Nick Collison talked a lot about it last year, is that he really grew up and he really embraced the leadership role and kind of understood that, like, this is his team. And, you know, I think that any kind of give and take that there was between Durant and Westbrook, any kind of tug of war where they were trying to see whose team it really was, I mean, that stuff, for the most part, it was nonsense before, but I mean, truly, that is all dissolved. And these guys are in it together. And I think that, like I said earlier, I think that they both realize they need each other, which is really important. And, you know, they've both accomplished a lot. You know, Durant's got the MVP. Westbrook doesn't have one. Kind of got close to it last year. But I think both guys have accomplished enough. They've made a bunch of money. They're going to make a whole bunch more. They've established themselves as top, you know, five or six players in the entire world. I think that they realize what the goal is now, and that's to win it all. And they understand what it takes to do that. There's no individual success out there that they're looking for right now, other than they want to do this together. And I think that fact is going to mean that maybe Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant score less this year. Maybe their numbers come down a little bit. Maybe they share the ball more. Maybe the Thunder are a little bit more of a balanced team. But I think both guys are completely going to buy into the fact that that's okay, because as long as the Thunder are really good, that type of stuff doesn't matter. And I think that that's just a fact of those two guys. Like you said, I mean, they played together, I think this is going to be their eighth season together, and they're going to come up on 27, 28 years old. And it's just a matter of growing up. That's kind of something that people forget about the Thunder, is that, you know, this is still actually a really young team, and these guys are just now coming into the primes of their career. Now, maybe it all blows up next summer if Kevin Durant leaves, but assuming these guys all stay together, we're looking at an unprecedented almost run of continuity in today's NBA for guys that basically joined up as 20-year-olds to be able to play together for 15 years or something.
Oh, hands down. And I was just thinking that I'm trying to think of the last duo of really elite players. And then if you want to put Serge in there, two trio of guys who stayed together, you know, it's 5-6 years, and somebody mm-hmm. kind of outgrows their role and wants to leave, or there's a beef, or they just can't pay them. But this, like you said, we're going on 7-8 years with those two, and it's amazing. And it's the roll of the dice that they haven't won one yet. But, I mean, honestly, OKC trotted out Derek Fisher at the backup point guard. He was going to start him sometime. They had Perkins flopping around in the middle doing his wounded bear act, and they were kind of hurting for backup bigs. Now it's almost an embarrassment of riches. I think DJ Augustine is one of the best backups you're going to find in the NBA. He looked really good for Detroit before he got traded, and he made some really good plays for OKC. You know, he's not a great defender. Now you guys have Steve Adams in town. You got Cantor, who's capable of putting up 25 and 12 in a heartbeat. Serge can play the center. You got McGarry. So there's almost an embarrassment of riches, but I think two of the weaknesses, backup point guard and maybe post-scoring, have now been taken care of. Talk to me a little bit about how you see DJ Augustin and Cantor fitting in, especially with all the talk with Cantor. I know the defensive numbers are there. We know. So I don't see it. People, he's going to be unplayable against certain teams. Sure, he's going to have some bad games. So I want to hear your thoughts on how Augustin and Cantor will affect the team next year.
Yeah, to your point about, you know, Cantor being unplayable, that's what I think a lot of people miss about this whole Enes Kanter and Oklahoma City thing, is that that's perfectly fine for the Thunder. If he's unplayable, that's okay, because Enes Kanter to Oklahoma City is a complete luxury. You know, they paid him a lot of money, and I think Sam Presti would tell you right now that for next season, he's going to make way too much money. But that's the position that the Thunder are in right now. They had the money to spend. It's not going to hurt them. They're willing to pay the tax bill. So all these narratives that have floated around about the Thunder, it's funny how they're just really damned if they do, damned if they don't at this point. You know, if they didn't pay them, then they're cheap again. But if now they do pay them, now they're stupid. So, like, they've got this guy that is a very unique player. He's 23 years old. Like you said, James, his defensive numbers are hideous. They're really bad. But there is a chance that this guy improves, and he gives them something that they've never had before. And I think that the one thing that people forget when they're evaluating Enes Kanter in those 26 games, where, by the way, he averaged 18 and 11 in them, and yes, his real plus-minus numbers were bad, and his on-off-court efficiency numbers were bad. But at the same time, Enes Kanter hasn't played a single minute with Kevin Durant. He only played six games with Serge Ibaka. So,
yes.
You know, you talk about DJ Augustine, you talk about Kyle Singler, all those the additions that they made. This Thunder team has yet to play together yet. And, you know, to me, it's the deepest team that they've ever had, you know, in terms of the weapons that they can have. And when they're able to trot out that team, maybe there's a night where Enes Kanter doesn't fit. Maybe somebody's playing small against him. Maybe somebody's abusing him in the pick and roll. And you know what? They can take him off the floor. They don't have to play him. And maybe there's another night where he fits and they can feed him in the post, or he can run pick and roll, because that pick and roll with Westbrook was really, really good last year. And they can just ride Enes Kanter for a night, and they don't have to lean on Kevin Durant to play 38 minutes and score 36 points. And that's what the Thunder are looking at Enes Kanter to do, is that they don't look at him as, you know, this guy that's going to be the backbone of the team. Like the Portland Trailblazers, they're the idiots. They're the ones that were throwing him a max contract to be a franchise cornerstone. It wasn't the Thunder. The Thunder just matched it. They just wanted to keep the guy. The Thunder basically had two options. They could either watch him go to a division rival, or they could match it and they could keep him. And they decided to match it and keep him. So, you know, I think that as you look at DJ Augustine, you look at Enes Kanter, you look at the weapons that the Thunder have, you know, one thing that I've said before is that if the Thunder go out and they sign DJ Augustine, Enes Kanter, and Kyle Singler this summer, without those three ever being on the team, people are sitting there and they're falling over backwards in their chairs saying, what a summer the Oklahoma City Thunder just had. I can't believe they signed those three guys. But for some reason, everybody, since they've already been on the team before, everybody's looking at this and they're evaluating this in a completely different manner. And I just don't quite get it.
I'm standing up and cheering right now. Bravo, Mr. Young, because that's – I mean, let's be real. This team has been so close so many years, and you added a guy – hey, what's one thing you keep saying? Oh, they need a post score. You got a bona fide post score. What else do they say? We need somebody who can actually run the offense and is not 84 years old, not Derek Fisher. You got DJ right in there. You got shooting. You got Morrow on the wings. You got defense on the wings, Roberson. And it's funny, I was just actually looking. Last year, the season kind of turned. I think they lost like seven of nine games down the stretch. During that stretch, Roberson missed like seven of those games. I think Roberson was hurting right around then, and that would actually hurt more than Enes Kanter. Also, if I remember correctly, Kanter was dealing with some knee or leg issues, wasn't he? He actually missed a couple games.
He had a pretty good thigh bruise, I think. I think he missed two games because of it. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and then he was a little limited too. I want to say ankle or something. Maybe I'm making that part up. But either way, fully rested, full training camp. This team is just as deep as ever. Now, the one thing I think people might have a question about is that shooting guard spots. Ever since Kevin Martin took off a few years back, it's been a rotating, you know, kind of we got to find somebody getting there, and Roberson seems to be the guy they're leaning on right now. Of course, we're not going to talk too much about Deion Waiters, the step-back king. Morrow offensively is great, but, you know, his defense, he makes the effort, but a little bit lacking there. How do you see that rotation going? Who do you think is the starting five on opening night?
Yeah, that's the tough thing. And you know, as you look at the Thunder, you know, obviously they kind of tried to go with Tabo 2.0 and Andre Roberson. I mean, they thought that he was going to develop. But the thing is about him is that he can't shoot. And everybody can see that. But you know what I actually found kind of fascinating about him is for some reason I looked at his road versus home splits in terms of three-point shooting. I think he made two threes all season at home. And he didn't make his first one until like February or March. He started out with a goal of 37 from home. But he shot like almost 40% from three on the road. So like, I don't know if that's just like a quirky stat thing or like the guy had a problem shooting at home or who knows. But like, yeah, he's an offensive liability. And come playoff time, people would figure out a way to scheme him off the floor. But there's no question about it. The guy can play defense. He's extremely long. He's rangy. 6'7" with really, really great athleticism. He's a great finisher at the rim. He can run in transition. He can rebound his position. He can defend multiple spots. So, I mean, the guy has a spot. And honestly, I think he's the starting shooting guard come opening night, because if you look at the metrics, there's no question about it that Westbrook, Robertson, Durant, Ibaka, Adams starting five was really, really effective. I think it might have been the best Thunder lineup last year, period. It just didn't get to play together very much. And You know, I think that a lot of people have looked at the Thunder and they've looked at that shooting guard spot. It's been an area of an issue. You know, you mentioned Kevin Martin and then there was James Harden before him. It hasn't mm-hmm. been a real productive spot for the Thunder, but, you know, it really doesn't need to be. And, yes, would the Thunder love to have a Wes Matthews there or a Jimmy Butler or somebody that could play both sides of the floor and score and defend? But, yeah, like 25 other teams would love that guy too. I mean, it's not like that those, you know, two-way shooting guards are just falling off trees. So, you know, the Thunder are kind of leaning on a specialist. To me, the concern there is that, you know, in today's NBA, you look at the way the Warriors played and the Spurs before them winning a championship, it was teams that really kind of featured five offensive threats on the floor at the same time. And, you know, Robertson's not that kind of guy. He's a guy that, you know, that is clearly a liability, clearly somebody that the teams can sag off of and clog the paint. They don't have to worry about him in the corner as much. So, you know, I think that you still probably – they'll probably still end up starting him. But, you know, the beauty is that then you got Anthony Morrow, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the entire league. You can throw him out there in situations. You can throw Deion, best player in the league, Waiters out there if you need to use somebody else. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think Deion Waiters thinks he's going to be the starter right now. But, oh, you know, once training camp rolls around, I think it'll probably – I don't think he'll be that guy.
Terrifying to think of a lineup of Westbrook, Anthony Morrow, Steve Novak. I'm sorry, not even Novak. What's my guy's name? Kyle Singler, KD at the four, and Serge at the five. That's absolutely a nightmare. Or DJ at the one. Oh, my goodness. So who's your crunch time lineup? What do you think the crunch time lineup? I appreciate you taking the time. We'll ask you a couple more quick questions, and we'll get you out of here. Who do you think the crunch time lineup is?
Yeah, you know, I think that it'll probably be probably similar to that lineup you just said, just because I think that they like Durant playing the four. You know, there's kind of, for some reason, there's been this, like, weird thing that's developed over really this offseason that Scott Brooks never played small ball with Kevin Durant before, but he really did a lot. The Thunder closed a lot of games with Durant playing power forward, and it's typically one of their more effective lineups because a lot of people see it as an offensive lineup, but really it was an incredible defensive lineup because especially when they had a guy like Thabo Sefolosha, because you could switch basically everything. And that was so much length and so much athleticism. I mean, if you ask Greg Popovich about playing the Thunder, he had nightmares about the length and athleticism those guys had. Every little pocket pass, all that Spurs ball movement that worked so flawlessly, when the Thunder would trot out all those arms and legs and athleticism that they had and the guys that could run and jump, the Spurs couldn't do any of that stuff. And the Thunder just kind of chewed them up. So I think that's a lineup that the Thunder will lean on a lot. You know, they could obviously go big. They could go Adams and Ibaka, or they could go Kanter and Ibaka. I don't foresee Kanter playing a ton of closing lineups just because, you know, he can be a liability because teams could try to expose him in the defensive pick and roll. At the same time, maybe he's improved in that area and they can get him out on the floor just because he isn't more of an offensive threat. Because we all know the big issue for the Thunder in the past in close big games has been is that the offense stalls out. And to be able to have somebody that you can toss the ball down to in the post, draw a double team, kick out to somebody, swing the ball, you're creating ball movement and just kind of generating an offense that the Thunder really haven't had in the past. So maybe Kanter does fit in. And that's kind of the beauty of the roster, I think, is that Billy Donovan, and it's going to be on him to figure it out, has a lot of different options that he could lean on there. It's not just one, you know, it's not just one that he's got to look at. I think that he can look at this as kind of a game-by-game thing.
Right, and that's the thing with OKC this year. The regular season doesn't really matter. We know that they're built for the playoffs. Their eyes are on the final prize. Where do you see them falling? ESPN had them, I think, what, fifth? Their hoop forecast or whatever they're doing.
Yeah,
that's amazing to me because OKC is so deep, and Kevin Durant is still the second best player on the planet. No matter what anybody says, Russell Westbrook has shown that he's up there, top four, top five, six, seven players on the planet. Where do you see them falling in the West this year?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, the West is obviously really, really tough. There's no doubt about it. And I think that there's just some hangover left off from last season and what happened with the Thunder winning 45 games. I think there's some concerns probably and some valid concerns about Kevin Durant's health. But if we're just going to stand here and assume, because that's all we can really do, that Westbrook, Durant, and Ibaka play 80 games next season, or that they're at least fully healthy, and that the only time that they rest is for strategy and not for health concerns, I think the Thunder are winning 60 games. And I think that they're finishing at least top three, probably top two, maybe number one in the West. And I know a lot of people are going to point at me and say, hey, since you live in Oklahoma City, you therefore can't have an objective opinion about this. But I don't know what I'm missing here. I don't know why I'm so out of left field when I stand there and I look at the Thunder probably having two, like you said, two of the top four, maybe two of the top three players in the entire league. You look at that Miami Heat team that rolled the 27 straight, and what they win, 64 games, something like that. The reason that they were so great, they had LeBron James, the best player in the world, Dwayne Wade was playing at a ridiculous level, and Chris Bosh. They had three great players. The rest of that team was pretty much trash. I mean, they had Shane Battier, who was pretty good, Mike Miller, who was pretty good. I mean, they had some other good kind of role player guys that weren't that great. But that team was really about two guys, really three guys. Yeah, I mean, they had Mario Chalmers, who was obviously – Mario Chalmers was the best player in the league. I forgot about him. but, like, you throw out Russell Westbrook and you throw out Kevin Durant together, and they're going to play 35 to 40 minutes, that team's going to win 50 games in their sleep, probably 55, and then you throw in the strength of the roster behind them. I think a lot of people have tried to kind of paint this picture that Enes Kanter is more of a liability than he is a help, and maybe so, but – I think the guy is a lot better than people give him credit for, and I think he brings a different dynamic to the team. So I've got the Thunder winning close to 60, maybe more than that. I think that they're finishing top three, top two. I think that they're going to be battling for that number one seed in the West right up and through April.
Amen, my brother. I hope they stay healthy, man. That's the main thing. It's weird because I keep hearing, big man with Andrew. He's not a big man. Kevin Durant's not a big man. He's almost 7 foot, but we know he's not a big man. So can I ask you a couple real quick questions, and then of course, I'll let you have your evening back. I really appreciate the time. What's going on with Alex Abrines?
Yeah, you know, the thing with him was that the Thunder love him, and there's no doubt about it. You know, he's second-round pick, picked 32nd overall, and I think put me on the spot, 2014 maybe, 2014 draft, yeah. I think, or 2013 maybe. One of those two. The Thunder love him. He was a great, great player for FC Barcelona. He's a kind of a rangy shooting guard. He's clearly got to develop a little bit in his body. He's a little bit he needs to get stronger, but he can shoot it. He can handle it. He can pass it. And the Thunder look at that guy as somebody that they're going to bring over eventually. He signed, I think, a new contract with Barcelona that's keeping him there, I think, through the 2017 season. But this is kind of part of the Thunder's long-term planning, is that they see it as they've got guys coming off the books in 2016, 2017. I don't think the Thunder are going to re-sign Deion Waiters. I don't think they're going to try all that hard to, unless Deion takes just a big pay cut and doesn't really want to go anywhere else, which, you know, to me, surely doesn't sound like something Deion Waiters is going to do. I think that they, you know, as Anthony Morrow gets older, as Deion Waiters probably moves on to somewhere else, I think that they kind of see Abrines as the guy that may come over and eventually kind of step in and fill that kind of role.
Okay. How about Josh Eustace?
Yeah, he's super interesting. I from what I understand, is he didn't quite take the developmental leap last season in the D League that they quite hoped to. He shot around 30% from three. He's, you know, what I've heard is if you think Andre Robertson's bad offensively, then you got to go see Josh Eustace. So, he's highly intelligent. He's a Stanford guy. He's got a great motor. He's got a great understanding, I think, of the game. And I think he's got one of the most important things about him is that I think he's got a great understanding of role. And that's something that the Thunder have kind of tried to transition and look to draft recently. You know, people talk about, you know, you got to go out and you got to get the best player. You got to get this. You got to get that. Well, when your team in the Thunder's position, if you're going out there and you're drafting James Harden, Reggie Jackson, Jeremy Lamb, you're drafting guys that were really good in college, they're not going to want to stick around and play fourth, fifth, sixth fiddle to Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. If you want to draft guys that can fit into your long-term planning, you got to draft guys that are willing to step into the NBA and be role players right off the bat, which doesn't happen very often for college kids. You know, there's not many college players that are stepping into the NBA and say, man, I just want to be a role player that plays like 14 minutes a game and gets paid just barely the veteran minimum. I mean, that doesn't happen. So the Thunder have kind of tried to find those type of guys that are willing to do that. I think Josh Eustace is that kind of guy, but he's got a ways to go in terms of development. I think that, you know, he's part of the team now. He got his contract. He signed his rookie deal. He's getting paid like an NBA player, but I bet he plays a decent amount back in the D League this year.
Okay, and last question: how about Samaj Christian? One of my favorite guys. I love his game, but again, you guys are in win now mode, and DJ backing up Russ. So, what do you see Samaj doing?
You know, that was a really interesting thing because, you know, I think that the Thunder had one guy in the draft that they really wanted to take, and that was Cameron Payne. And if Cameron Payne doesn't fall to the Thunder at 14, I think Christian is probably part of this roster right now. And, you know, I think he just signed overseas. I don't remember what team he signed with, somewhere in Italy maybe. But I don't know if he's going to necessarily fit into the Thunder's long-term future. He could come over potentially after next summer because DJ Augustine is going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. In the summer of 2016, if the Thunder don't re-sign him, then now they have a gap at that third point guard position. Maybe that's when Christian can come over and fill that role. Because, like you said, I was in Orlando. I watched him at Summer League 2, and the guy is impressive. He obviously has a hole in his game in terms of jump shooting, but he can get to the rim. And he can finish. And he tore it up in the D-League last year, was really, really effective. He's got a good feel, good handle. And he's big, you know, he's a big guy, 6'4", and he can go to the rim and he can finish. So I think he's somebody that the Thunder really like, but, you know, just kind of the chips fell where they did. And it turned out that, you know, instead of being on this roster, it's Cameron Payne instead. And Christian's going to have to wait a little bit a while before maybe he fits in.
Oh, man. Hey, the game is the game. But, hey, never fear, you guys got the Kari Johnson in there. But, hey. Royce, I really appreciate you taking the time to come by. Where can everybody find you on Twitter and see your work?
It's pretty simple, at Royce Young. And according to one guy, though, I'm sure you saw it too, that he was curious as if I was going to be as douchey and condescending on a podcast as I am on Twitter. So apparently don't follow me and don't listen to me because I'm apparently a douchey, condescending kind of person. So,
hey, you know what, Royce?
Yeah, find me there.
I thought that was actually directed at me. I thought he was saying that to me. So maybe I'm going to – yeah, I'll say he was saying it to you then.
Yes.
Hey, enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'd love to have you on again this year. Hopefully we're going to talk about your, you know, the team's 23-game winning streak or something. Hey, Royce, thanks for coming by, man. I'd definitely love to have you on again, man. Have a good evening.
You bet, James. Enjoyed it.
You the man.
You bet.
All right. So, yeah, that was ESPN's Royce Young, DailyThunder.com. Really good follow, and he really has his finger on the pulse of what OKC is doing. I'm really high on those guys. They, for years, I've been fascinated with. There was a play, I want to say maybe 2011, 2012, must have been 2011 playoffs, when, maybe in 2010, they were playing the Lakers, and it's when Russ tried to dunk on everybody from, like, the dotted line, he got fouled. That's when I first really sat up and took notice of OKC and what a talent that Russ was. And, you know, of course, we'd all been watching Durant before that. So I think they're going to make a lot of noise in the West this year. I think somehow they're getting underrated. And I hope KD's healthy, man. I think he's an all-timer. I voted him pretty high. I'm doing the Hoops Critic, HC50, the top 50 guys. So I voted him pretty high. He's a once-in-a-generational talent in his own right. He's not LeBron James, but we've never seen a guy of his size with that kind of scoring touch. And from Russell Westbrook, we've never seen a point guard who can do the things that he does. He's a big point guard, but so athletic and pretty much unstoppable when he's out there on the court. So, and then Serge Ibaka, I call him a unicorn because there's not many players out there who can block shots and hit threes and doesn't need a lot of touches and can defend the post, you know, actually one-on-one and be a help side defender. So they got a lot of pieces there. They're one of the most intriguing teams. I'm really interested to see what they do. And I'm rolling the dice again for them for the last 3 or 4 years that they're my championship favorite. I don't think KD leaves, even if they don't make it. I don't see him leaving. There's too much there. On the flip side of that, sometimes I think players might get to that point where they think, well, have we plateaued and it's time for us to move on. So it's a possibility. Of course it is. I don't think it's going to happen, though. We'll see. That does it for the OKC Thunder preview with Royce Young. And that's it for me. We'll be on next week. I'm not sure I'm going to have yet, but another great guest to save me from myself. Thanks all for listening. I'm out of here.